Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Good evening to all our admirable friends out there. It's Tuesday.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, Alex.
Good to be back.
Hello.
Good to be back. Tonight's show is on equanimity, that word that everybody has a hard time initially understanding.
Well, hopefully tonight we'll demystify it and break it down and make it into a,
I think horses.
A word we're going to use every day.
Well, let's give a picture image from the document in case you hadn't downloaded it tonight. It's that tightrope walker. So equanimity is not something that means I just don't care. It kind of means that it's an active equanimity, something that we actually have to kind of take little steps to balance.
Okay, so this may seem like really goofy, but it reminds me, and I was laughing about it earlier, it reminds me of, what is that song, Know When to Hold 'Em, Know When to Fold 'Em? Who sang that song?
Oh, that's great. Kenny Rogers.
The Kenny Rogers
that's
song.
A great,
Know When to Hold 'Em and Know When to Fold 'Em.
Beautiful. Now so, that ought to help anybody relate to equanimity.
So that's what we're going to get to tonight. We're going to figure out how to hold them and fold them and skillfully know when to do either one.
Carol, you surprised me with that one.
I don't know where I pulled that out of, but trust me, it was...
I think it's the Geico commercial I think he's on or something. I've been hearing that too.
Yeah, but he's been held up by a prop now.
No. He's still singing around.
Yeah.
So, okay, so how do you want to start? What do you want to do?
I think we need to, I think we should begin with our system and gratitudes and generosity. And like we start every show, recognizing the good things we've done this week in terms of generosity and acts of kindness, as well as things that we're grateful for, people we're grateful to.
We should remind our listeners that we're just getting these right off of our public acts of generosity and appreciations and gratitudes that's on the website.
Yes.
And you want to tell them how they can go about doing that?
Well, first of all, tonight's show is bbsradio.com/admirablefriends, or if you're catching us on iTunes podcast, you're not live. Also, www.admirablefriends.org is our main website where we have a free subscription to join the system and join the conversation in terms of keeping a journal of your practice and recording aspects of that journal or selectively deciding what you want to share anonymously with the group. So we're going to start by reading some of these anonymous posts regarding generosity, which is where we always start. And we start for generosity because we want to get our minds kind of the antidote to taking and wanting and tendency to be greedy. We want to look towards letting go and being generous. Who wants to start?
Well, I will start with a act of generosity, and it starts by taking over the evening household duties to free up time for my partner. and the action was tangible. And reflection on this was getting a break from the routine in a stress-free way can be very healthy. So that's nice, a generous act like that, you know, freeing somebody up so that they can have a less stressful time of doing it. So a little shared responsibilities. No? Yes?
Yes, definitely. I saw an entry in, let's see, appreciation I kind of liked.
Okay.
Public appreciation, sunshine after a lot of cloudy days.
Boy, isn't that true. That must have been last week, because it seemed like there were a whole lot of days strung together that were pretty cloudy. I thought I'd have to have like a grow lamp or something walking around with me.
I appreciate my
really
wife.
I
appreciate my wife. She is the best.
Well, that's
Alex, you got one?
A public act of kindness. Somebody going around picking up some random trash and garbage.
Hmm. Well, that's helpful.
Hey, I didn't know we were bringing in advertising during the show.
Catching up with a dear friend. A busy day that goes smoothly. Lots of appreciations. How about for gratitudes? We get some gratitudes?
Mm-hmm. I think we got some gratitudes in there.
Let's see. I got setting aside time for us to have one-on-one quality time without distractions.
Okay.
I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way, and it's important to plan our time and activities to ensure quality time with admirable friends. Nice. Nice.
And here's someone who's grateful. They helped me get all my donated items out of my car in a quick and friendly way. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. And the reflection was, it was very nice to have help letting go of some of my child's baby clothes. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. People still persist in posting these public gratitudes. And again, the gratitude is you're grateful to someone else for the kind act that they showed, and hopefully the reflection allows you to kind of internalize that and learn from it.
But when you put them in the journal like this, and when you write them down, you can go back and look, and you say to yourself, you know, I do things that are towards others in a kind and generous way. So it's kind of like it's a nice inspiration for yourself when somebody else does it, but also the giving part just builds on its compounding, I think.
Absolutely. I know I like looking at them when I enter mine in during the day. I like reading the public acts. It really kind of motivates me.
I do like seeing what other people do and how they feel when they explain what their reflection is on it.
No,
it makes me feel good. Is that kind of like the empathetic joy? Could that be considered empathetic joy?
It absolutely is. You can direct that towards yourself. You know, if we look at the public evaluations, too, of the mind qualities, because there's a slide rule that you kind of evaluate each of the mind qualities, it might be interesting to see some of the public evaluations there. There's four of them. The first person rates their equanimity at a 1 out of 10. The next person rates their equanimity as a 4 out of 10. Again, we don't know who these people are, but they're self-rating their levels of equanimity. Another 4 out of 10. And another 4 out of 10. Actually, a 3 out of 10. You know, it's interesting to note some of the other qualities as it relates to equanimity. Equanimity is number 10 on our list. And we talk about that being the fruit of the labor. But you'll notice if you go through these public evaluations, that equanimity is always the lowest rating. So that runs true. That's what they're actually finding in practice. Most of these have determinations and discernment up in the 5 and the 6 area, mm-hmm. and equanimity down in the 2.
Why do you mm-hmm. think?
Well, I think you can be determined and you can work on your discernment, your wisdom faculty. I think we can relate to all this, but when one has an equanimous state of mind, that's a rare situation, and I think generally we think that's a harder thing to accomplish.
Do you think perhaps we're a little too hard on ourselves?
I think we often deserve that.
Go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just are we hard on ourselves? Well, that kind of is what I was going to speak to with it, is that an equanimous action, we kind of hold as a covenant action, just as Buddy was suggesting. It doesn't happen often, that kind of everything is in that line. You know, the term, I guess, a lot of times people are throwing around a term like flow or in the zone, I guess is another sports term for it. That's kind of how I see an attitude of equanimity, is that you're striking a very good balance on both sides of things, and everything's just kind of gelling together at that moment. And like we were saying with discernment, I don't think it happens as often, or we recognize it as often.
Yeah. And it is one of the qualities that is enhanced by a meditative practice. Because trying to will equanimity is a little bit difficult. You can kind of get that. You can kind of say, I'd like to look at this situation. And, you know, maybe we're looking at relationships, and we're looking at a relationship where we're having a hard time with a person. Mm-hmm. And we feel like, let's say they're not responding to our help. So we say, I'd like to act equanimous towards them, meaning I've got to learn to let it go. The serenity prayer, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So we sit here and let's say we will ourselves into letting go. Well, you ever notice with that troublesome relationship that tendency to be upset reappears?
Well, I think because the closure wasn't right to begin with. It wasn't the right letting go.
Yeah, and I think so often we think of equanimity as still the problem being outside of ourselves. This person, for instance, is giving me a problem in the relationship, mm-hmm. would be the paraphrase. And I need to learn to let them go because they haven't reached a certain state of reliable happiness. So it's their fault. At that point, we've already missed the true equanimity. Equanimity is an internal mind quality, which basically, under that scenario, you would notice that, let me go through the whole subject again, okay? So I've got a troubled relationship.
Okay.
I wish this person well on a regular basis, because I wish everybody well, and that would be goodwill, right? And then it's a troubled relationship. I believe the person is not happy. And I'm trying to help them with a compassion, an act of compassion. So I'm helping that person. And all of a sudden, I find that my efforts are cumbersome. I'm not successful in helping this person. So we now resort to equanimity. But equanimity on an internal way of reviewing that would be, you know, I need to recharge my batteries, look inside and find out what I should be focused on right now, and what things I could work on that I can change, like mm-hmm. my own practice. You see, now we're talking about, we're recognizing we're missing equanimity. Not that there's something wrong with that person, that maybe there's something I'm missing here where my compassion might not be working. You see, the compassionate fool keeps trying.
Right.
And gets upset with the other person, and then finally tries to let go and say, I'm out of here. Okay.
Well, wouldn't you think that, to me, that would signal that it's not so much, if it's a compassionate fool trying to get the other person, you know, to see
unskillfully
them, it's got to be something that I'm doing. What am I wanting out of it that is making me become the compassionate fool? Now it doesn't have anything to do with the other person. It has to do with my actions.
Right, but before you could arrive at that situation, you'd have to say to yourself, look, this is not working,
mm-hmm.
and I need to take responsibility for my own equanimity
mm-hmm.
and basically look at things that I can be doing with my own practice. So you step back and see, at that point, you start to realize, what am I doing? You know, and then you go further down the line. But the moment we think equanimity is simply that person doesn't get it, I let go of them. That's 5-minute equanimity, and the problem reappears.
Yeah.
You know, so you've never really exercised equanimity because you haven't got to your equanimity and what's lacking in your own balance and your own practice. Because ideally, you should be able to show compassion and meet people just where they are and either say the right thing or say nothing at all. There shouldn't be any rift or uneasy feeling with this relationship at all in an ideal sense.
Well, the definition of equanimity is the mental calmness, composure, and evenness of emotion and temperament. How could you possibly get to that mental calmness and composure without having some sort of space or meditative practice or reflection to see the whole situation? I mean, this is where we say it's the culmination of everything. It's the discernment. It's the patience. It's everything all rolled into one. Yeah. And you've got a bag full of tools, and you're saying, I know exactly which one, you know, I need in order to work on this project or be a craftsman at your, what the tool you need for your certain craft.
To actually exhibit equanimity.
Correct.
But you can actually exercise equanimity by looking just at your own practice. If you make that shift and say, what can I do right now? And if that means saying nothing or disengaging from an argument or disengaging from a relationship, you've used a pretty smart way of using equanimity because you took responsibility for your own lack of balance, and that brought you in balance.
Correct, because you didn't keep the vicious cycle going by,
that's correct.
By keep going
out. But that's what we don't often see. It's the adage that it takes, we operate from a standpoint that says it takes two to fight. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't. It takes one to fight. Because any one of that person in that relationship can step away.
That's correct.
So it doesn't take two to tango. It actually just takes one. With a wise and quiet mind, you just learn to step away from the situation. Now, that's easier said than done, of course. And that's why the practice is so important with the other nine steps. So you're working it all. But at the end of the day, I that's why I phrased that question around relationships, because...
Well, that's the bulk of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it shows up. Don't you think, Alex, our lack of equanimity shows up around relationships?
Absolutely. It's a... because you're talking about an evenness of emotion, and relationships are highly emotional... instances in our lives. We can detach from certain choices as emotional, but when it comes to relationships, the humans as themselves have emotions, and these things can get the best of us and overtake us. And that's why it's one of those qualities that I think is a lot of times the misconception, as we were just talking about, is that it can be attained very quickly. You know, everybody's looking to have that mental calmness and that composure, at any given moment. But it's a really refined quality that, funny enough, gets its growth from working through the other nine. And so it's not there's not a silver bullet to acting with equanimity. It's a state you have to cultivate and arise at. Through doing some other things,
not the least of which would be contemplation or meditation.
Let's
call it like it is.
Yeah, those two would be two heavy ones, but there's, you find the right sort of coach or teacher to take you on the road. There are a lot of skillful activities you can do to gain this, but it's one of those that when it happens, it's kind of, we said it before, it's like the candy. This one will keep you coming back. If you experience acting with this sort of a temperament, you want more of that, because the results that it yields are the results I think we all are ultimately looking for.
So. It does build confidence too. It's the cycle, the concept. Practice.
Understanding.
And then it just builds on itself, because when you can act in an equanimous way mm-hmm. towards a relationship, it shows that your practice is, you're getting it. You got an idea of where this is all going.
Well, the emotion we the more negative emotion we kind of tag to it is anxiousness, and for me, it's a perfect emotion to tag with a quality like equanimity, because I am very sense prone to anxiousness. I can feel it. I know exactly, you know, where in my body I can begin to feel this sort of anxiousness, and by tagging those two together, I can physically feel when anxiousness is coming. At the same time, I trigger, something from within to say, here's the time where you can use this quality. You can act with equanimity here because you're feeling the other side of it. You've recognized anxiousness. Now it's time to use the quality that's going to help you get to, you know, where you want to go.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of go through the definition before we actually get into the answering the questions that we got for write-in people that are about relationships and how I ask them, you know, when and how do they use equanimity and also some of the other relationship mind states mm-hmm. that we suggest that they use. Let's talk a little bit about the principles of developing equanimity. The first one right out of the gate is equanimity is all about practicing when and when not to act. So there's your discernment, and as well as how to act. So you've got timing, and then you've got the how. So you can see how just those alone, just discerning through when to use equanimity, when not to, and how to use it, is a challenge. And again, especially if we're not working with actions, if we're starting to be self-absorbed or identifying with a problem as being our problem, then equanimity is so far down the road. You have to look at it as actions first, mm-hmm. in particular your actions, before you could decide, how do I let go of certain actions? How do I approach? What should I say or what shouldn't I say? So action versus identification of the me and the I is a big aspect of equanimity.
And part of developing the equanimity is not to say about a certain relationship, it's like, oh, the heck with them, you know, be yeah. off with you now. I don't want anything to do with you. It's because that's going to resurface again because you haven't really solved anything. You know, whether you haven't said it's them or you or whatever, the onus falls on you to take a really hard look in a truthful way. What am I seeing? How am I handling this? Am I offering goodwill? Is that not working? Compassion, and what's in it that I'm not seeing?
Yeah. Right back to you again, versus the problem being outside of yourself. Two different types of equanimity, the kind that give rise to skillful mental qualities and the kind that give rise to unskillful mental qualities. Unskillful would be when we use it to anxiously avert an unpleasant situation. Alex, do you ever find that anxiousness, you're sometimes anxious about averting something and using equanimity?
Absolutely. It's exactly where I was going to go with it. That anxiousness, typically you say, I'm anxious, and you rush quickly to get anxiousness. So while I guess in one aspect you're kind of fooling yourself that, oh, I'm anxious, and now I'm just going to get myself out of it with, you know, the next thing that comes across my path, which if you stopped and thought for a second, could potentially lead you down a deeper hole or more anxiousness. So it's not just a matter of saying, oh, I'm anxious, get me out of it. It's that anxious once again brings you to another level, that if I'm so anxious about something, what am I running away from? If this emotion of anxiety is rushing me to get away from it, what's at the heart of that? Where's this emotion and what's it running from? So you dig down a little bit.
If you're running from it, then you're going in the wrong direction, that's for sure. You're not going to it or toward it. To right. find out exactly where the problem is, because that's where the answer is. It's not in the opposite direction.
Right, and the anxiousness is kind of, it can lead you very fast in the same direction without really kind of taking some time to skillfully look at what's the heart of it here. What's really, what am I avoiding?
Right, what am I not seeing that's giving me this anxious feeling?
Okay, then a skillful use of equanimity would be when we want to help someone, but we find that we can't help them. Now we're Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if it would help for an example, something is, I can speak specifically. I always remember back in when I was taking classes in school, you'd get this, you know, you're in these big lecture rooms and, you know, you really chalk yourself up to having a really good understanding. You know, there's an open lecture and you know, anybody can raise a hand and interject. And I would feel this, you know, whatever topic we were discussing, I'd, you know, feel this, you know, anxious emotion coming on as I was trying to develop some sort of comment or something I would want to say on the topic. And as the anxiousness would come and you're like, well, where is this all coming from and what it is, you know, after going a couple of times and speaking through that anxiousness and realizing I don't know what I just said or even if that was on point, you understand possibly what you're running from is maybe you're looking at this from one side or haven't researched enough about what you're talking about. And so it can actually save you from making a very unskillful or a choice that you know, could bring more stress on you.
I always come back to that space, creating that space, giving, you know.
Yeah. Just to take inventory of the situation.
Yeah, just to, you know, look at it from an extra angle. You know, is this going to be skillful or check it out, skillful or unskillful? And well, I actually have an example. And let's see. So there's three of us, right? And there's one friend out of the three is a very unhappy person, just not so much negative, but just kind of really in their own stress. And they never ask how you're doing or how the kids are or anything like that. And this goes on and on and on. And so I went to the other friend and myself went to visit this very unhappy friend, and nothing had changed, you know, same old same. And that was one day. And a few days later, my friend said, well, let's go back and visit her again. And I said, no, I already did that. Oh, well, you know how unhappy she is. You know, let's go over and share. You know, it's like, that's not my role. You know, her happiness is not on my radar. There's nothing that I can say or do that's going to, you know, get them out of this hole that they're digging themselves into. You know, my being there, you know, showing interest in their life and their kids. And it was just all very one way. But for the other friend to say, well, you know how unhappy she is, you know, you know, like that's our job to go over there and boost her up. It's like, well, no. You know, 50% of my job is to do certain things,
yeah,
but the other 50% is them.
But you made a personal decision based upon what you felt you could or couldn't do to the situation.
I felt like I exhausted every resource I had, and I just didn't see any change coming over the years. I mean, this has been going on forever, it seems. And so I just at that point said, you know, enough already. I just can't invest anymore. And I had to just make that decision and
use equanimity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That 50% rule I use a lot too. And I think that falls under equanimity if I can remember. The 50% rule being there's things you can control and there's things you can't. And we're basically saying you're best really working and understanding the 50% you can control, because that's really where your strength lies. Just because I buckle my seatbelt in a car doesn't mean I'm not going to get in a car accident. But I'm giving myself the best opportunity and chance by making sure that the 50% I can control, I am, you know, doing so with composure, calmness, and in a.
But as it relates to other, people, like in Carol's case, I think it's important to try to remember or to make sure that you're coming from a position of goodwill. And what does that mean? Basically, in that particular person's case, they find reliable happiness.
Sure.
You're not just saying, there's nothing I can do, I hope they sink.
No. But I just know that my doing it for them is not going to have them find it.
Right.
You know, they have to do some of the heavy lifting on their own. That's almost like covering the check for them, you know? It's just like giving, you know, always... you know, enabling almost. And that's not helping them at all. So But you know, I was going back and you were talking about the slide rule and how we rate ourselves low on equanimity.
Right.
And so because sometimes how we can think we can do more, it's almost like divesting yourself of a sinking stock. You know, at what point do you cut it loose and say, you know what, I gave it my best shot. I thought it was going to turn out differently, but I see it for what it is now, the timing, or for whatever reason, I just can't do anything with it. Maybe we give ourselves such a low value on the scale is because we keep going at it and at it and at it, thinking just one more time. If I just give it a little bit more of myself, if I'm more, you know.
Well, why do we keep going at it?
Well, yeah,
because we really don't see it for what it is.
Yeah, we don't have the mental composure to call it what it is. The mental composure is not there. Okay?
Whether we think
I think there's a bit of us that wants to naturally go to the when we're not acting that way versus when we are acting that way. Our culture tends to point a little more towards the negative side of it and point out the times when we're not acting calm or in a state of composure. And so we're in that state. It's very hard to kind of control yourself and really, you know, almost kind of, you know, slow the blood down to the brain here, you know, relax a little bit. I'm not so sure we even know when we do act with that sort of composure. What do you think, Bud? You think most people can recognize an act of equanimity, or do you think they're more easily able to act and or recognize anxiousness actions?
Honestly, Alex, I think the reason why they rate themselves low is because they are low, and myself included. In my practice, equanimity is evolving slowly, and it's tracking behind most of the other aspects from what I can see, and I wasn't acting out of a place of equanimity on a regular basis because I didn't have the mental composure to make those choices. It seemed like you that I was leaning towards anxiousness in my choices around people, especially saying the wrong thing from timing. You know, and again, I don't look at it as beating myself up. I look at it as just actions that were unskillful at the time, and they're getting more skillful. And the more I stabilize the mind through paying attention to the 50% for me is my mind. I figure there's a movie camera up there, and the way I see the world is a function of how clear that movie camera works. And I've got to invest in that movie camera. So I've got to work on building the mind qualities as well as the meditation and the contemplation. It's all helpful. Then when the movie camera sees clear, it's just so easy. Equanimity just appears. So I guess that's a long-winded answer, but I think you know it when it's there. I think you feel it and you know it when you're acting clear. And they're beautiful times.
Well, I can say on this particular instance, I mean, they're few and far between. And I mean, I only bring this up because it was
You say
recent.
They're few and far between, but Alex was suggesting or considering that maybe they're not few, maybe they're happening more than we realize.
Well,
I can't necessarily agree with that, but I can see what he's saying.
Maybe not the... Go ahead, Mo.
I don't know. I just think that when it's obvious like that, all the planets are aligned correctly, so to speak. I think to a lesser degree, we're probably showing acts of equanimity, maybe with a little bit of a caveat of hanging on. Do you know what I mean? It's not like 100%, but maybe it's like 75, 80, you know, but a little hesitation going on, you know, wishing them goodwill and letting them go, but probably somewhere in the back of our mind, you know, I could have done more. Should I have done more? You know, trying to reinvest.
You ask yourself those troubled relationships. Are they put to bed or do they reappear? Why do we have the same problem on Christmas time? A lot of the troubled family relationships reappear. Why do the problems reappear? You're either going to take responsibility for the problem or you're going to continue to blame others. Right? If you take responsibility for the problem, then it's how we relate to these other people, not them. It's us. Right, so that's the tough thing to swallow, and that takes work.
Right, and then owning it afterwards. I mean, once you put your stake in the ground and you say, I wish them well. I can't have, I can't share in their empathetic joy, and I realize my limitations. I'm going to just kind of back away from this one. And then being okay with that.
Yes, but what I like about your situation, and I know which situation you were talking about when you gave your example, you went back to the well with this person to try it a different way after you were unsuccessful and had to use equanimity a couple years back, a few years back.
Right.
And I think that's a testimony to your personal responsibility, because what you said is, I'm going to look at it differently now. In other words, do I have more skills? Can I deal with it more effectively? Now, in this particular case, your skills, either your skills weren't along or the person actually got worse off, but you weren't ready to meet that person with equanimity. Mm-hmm. So you suggested, I don't want to be with this person. It's toxic, mm-hmm. right? But you did go back. And the point is that, in an ideal state, and I'm not trying to put that high bar on all of us, because as you know, I fully support it's a progression. But in an ideal state, we should be able to meet everybody with compassion. Meaning that we should be hoping them to find reliable happiness.
And I do. I don't have any ill will or animosity towards this person. I just realize that my limitations, whatever this person needs, I can't deliver.
And that's there you go.
So
and listen to that on tape, because you just said it. You defined it perfectly. You said, I don't have what it takes and whatever this person needs. See, your frame of reference was your ownership. You took ownership in that relationship. And I assure you, if everyone did that, what you just said, I don't think we'd have a lot of arguments, Carol. Don't you agree, Alex?
Yeah, that was well put. Absolutely.
You know, you're taking responsibility. That's what equanimity and this whole program is about. The relationship problems are not outside of yourself. You have to find a way. If you can't find a way, you almost use equanimity as, I'm going to back off this situation and recharge my batteries and find out what I can do. And when I find the answer to that question is, what can I can do? It's practice more. Mm-hmm. So I can come back and meet that person with compassion. I'm not using it as a get out of jail card for a relationship with that person.
No.
Then I've not assumed personal responsibility. I still think the problem's theirs.
But it's not adding more stress to you or the other person by backing away.
No, you're actually putting up a white flag and saying, I can't handle this. And that's okay. You know, I need space.
Because if we were truly developed and enlightened, I mean...
No problem.
Exactly. So
you're flowing with everybody.
And guess what?
So we wouldn't even be talking about this
for
so long.
We're human, yeah, faults and foibles and...
That's it.
And... eccentricities and things that...
But we still have to keep working at ourselves.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes it really encouraging to me. But I can see when people think that they're beating themselves up because they either didn't give them enough, you know, the compassionate fool, I need to keep giving them. And then all of a sudden that person says one thing that sets them off and then they hate the person for life.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, didn't you realize you kept going to bat? You didn't withdraw. You didn't bring out your white flag and said, I've had enough. I'm not ready for this. And that equanimity card, to me, is like a go get your gas filled up in your tank. Step away from the situation. Not in an effort because this person doesn't have it together. Then you're not operating from goodwill. If you're operating from goodwill, you're saying, I really wish this person well. I really would like to help this person. However, I just don't have what it takes. Actually, I spoke too much. Let's take a break, and we'll cover the questions that were wrote in afterwards. That sounds good?
Okay. All right. Okay. See you after the break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back on that barn burner of a topic, equanimity. I think everybody's out there must be sleeping. We should just like pass out no-dos.
What do you mean sleeping?
I don't know. It just seems like
it's... Gnosis comes out of the backdrop of my conversation.
No. I
don't know. I'm still stuck on
sleep.
The barn burning.
Well, it's not like one of those... It's not like one of those that, like, you know, just you can't get to sleep because you've just heard admirable friends talk about, you know, equanimity or something like that.
Another one. Like someone I heard said hit me like a bolt of lightning, and I asked him, "Oh, you've been hit by a bolt of lightning?" I mean, burning barns and everything. Oh boy.
I know.
Yeah, well, we got some reply in, but a couple people said, "I don't know." Well, let's read the questions again. Please share your thoughts on relationships. When or why do I wish goodwill? When or why do I show compassion? When or why do I show empathetic joy? And when or why do I say no? I cannot change this. Equanimity. So it's all surrounding around relationships. And what I was trying to do was frame the discussion with how generally to work with relationships. Let me just kind of give that overview again.
Got it.
We wake up in the morning, we wish everybody goodwill. And goodwill is...
You might as well start with a clean slate because it, you know...
You wish it to everybody. There's no limits. You start with yourself. And
it's limitless. It's one of the limitless.
Limitless goodwill.
Yes.
It doesn't cost you anything to wish somebody to find and act upon reliable happiness.
It doesn't.
All you're saying is, if you want to be real quick about it, is to act skillfully. I hope everyone acts skillfully today. At minimum, it means you're not going to get hit by a car if they were all acting skillfully, right? So you're wishing them to act skillfully. Now, you go out and meet your day, and you find some people that either are suffering or having stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you pull out the compassion card, right? And you try that. Or you find someone that's having a great day and acting real reliably, and you feel good for them. So there's either people that are having a bad day or people that are having a good day, in which case you give compassion or empathetic joy is the mind states that you kind of run through. Now, when you go out and try to be compassionate to someone and you find that they're either not responding or you feel like something's wrong or you feel like you're getting, not being met halfway, that's when you start to go to equanimity. And same thing with empathetic joy. If you find that you can't wish and be happy when someone else is actually happy, then it's time to use equanimity because for some reason you're hoping they're not happy.
And that just brings stress to yourself.
Right. But equanimity is the fail-safe plan that says I'm going to go to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the tactical side of how to use equanimity with relationships. So when I ask the question, when or why do you use it? The when would be, as I just explained, under different situations. When you use goodwill, you'd use it every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I use goodwill? Because if you didn't have goodwill towards your fellow man and you were actually hoping that something went wrong with them, then whatever goes wrong with them is going to come back to you. So it's not too strategic to not
right.
care about the next person. The goodwill is
a good strategy to go out.
Yeah, I mean it can't hurt you, you know, to wishing other people well. So when and why do I use compassion? You use compassion when you think you have the capacity to help someone who's in stress. When and why do you use empathetic joy? You feel good for somebody when they've been happy and they've acted upon it. However, there's times when people have been very fortunate, come into some good pleasantries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to be happy for them because they act like jerks. They got arrogant with it or they don't take care of people less in need, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you say to yourself, I can't. This person's a jerk. So then you have to use equanimity because you haven't found a way to relate to that person skillfully and learn to let it go. So let's go down the list and see what we do have for responses.
Well, I've got one that starts out actually with the topic of goodwill.
Go ahead.
And so when we say, you said, please share your thoughts on when or why do I wish goodwill? And so I find that wishing goodwill often occurs for me when I take time to observe humanity. For example, I was recently traveling abroad and I found myself frequently wishing goodwill to everyone I encountered. Being a traveler made it easier for me to observe the world around me, and those observations conjured up wishes of goodwill for everyone. I don't really know how to answer the why part of your question, other than it just feels like the right thing to do. As goodwill is one of the 10 ideal mind qualities, I guess I could just say that since it is a skillful action, I know it brings reliable happiness, that is why I do it, but I don't really think it through that much. It comes naturally.
That's really nice. I really like the fact that they used the idea of observing humanity and took a nice big picture there.
Yeah.
That made it easier to express goodwill.
I like it that it was on a global, like, as being a traveler, seeing the world as a bigger part of just what we see. What is it? Think globally, act locally. You know, so when we do that goodwill as part of humanity, perhaps it does get easier for us to bring it closer to home.
Okay, why don't we take a caller? Let's take a caller.
Okay. Who's on the line?
Who do we have?
Hi, this is Mike in California. I was listening to your show. It's very interesting.
Thank you, Mike.
And, you're welcome. And I was wondering, since you're talking, I guess, about relationships, relationships seem to be based initially upon, if it's face-to-face, what the person looks like, and then you're on your own, what do you think about something like eHarmony, where they try and match up compatibility, or maybe even astrology, as a way of kind of like, making it less difficult to get to know the person and see if you're compatible with them?
Yeah, I like it. That's a good.
That's an interesting question.
Well, Mike, thanks for your question. By the way, I appreciate
that. Yes, thanks for calling in. First,
you actually fed a softball to Alex and I because we're both certified Gallup's coaches who really utilize personality type profiling as a way to get to know people. So yeah. you won't find the arguments there, huh, Alex.
No, Mike brings up kind of really just like step one, right? Let's take relationships back to step one, meeting somebody and get that ball rolling in a direction. And I guess, yeah, I'm a little bit biased because of a lot of my history and understanding human behaviors and things like that, that I find it typically, it usually results in very good communication and a little bit deeper level of a discussion. Because I think you're kind of cutting through a lot of the, when you're face to face, I think as Mike was saying,
superficiality, to say what the person looks like.
Yeah. And I don't want to say you just push these emotions aside, but a lot of the times they just kind of convolute some of the other questions and things you really want to get to, and you know you will eventually. It's just, how do I shortcut this, and can we start talking about something meaningful and really understand if you, this thing between us is going somewhere further than this initial, as Mike said, superficial. But don't discount, I would say, the superficial. I think there is something to be said to be physically attracted to somebody. I think it in instances brings people towards a conversation they might not have had before. But I'm a big fan on anything where if you can immediately bring your communication level to that kind of an understanding, I'm all for that. And I think that's really the heart of why those sites like Match and eHarmony have done so well is because people are finding that when they found that someone, the connection there is a very strong one. So,
yeah. And Mike, what I might add is the way we use it as Gallup coaches and relationships is we use it as a starting point to get to know the person, and it helps us much more understand. We call it the car they drive, in other words, how they drive. But we also dig into values, which is another way that you can begin to enhance the discussion and getting to know somebody, because that's kind of like where they drive their car too. Because what they value is different than their behavior patterns. So that's kind of like a second angle or second way of looking and getting to know somebody. So, you know, we start with the talents or the behavior patterns and the traits, and then we go into values as being a second tier. And then lastly, it's the mind qualities that the show is principally based on. And that's a kind of a universal thing that kind of sits aside from the personality. And that speaks to their honesty, their integrity, and the virtuous character traits. Does that make sense, those three different kinds of disciplines?
Yes, it does. I would like to know what are your background and qualifications for doing all this? Because, I mean, are you like, do you have some kind of degree in psychology or something?
Actually, not. No psychology degree at all. Just a lot of business development and human, you know, management and family dynamics.
Communication skills, yeah. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. And I've got some studies in anthropology and human behaviors, but as far as certified psychological expert, no, not on this side.
Just, I will tell you, Mike, the more I learned about internally how the mind works, and in particular how my mind works by zeroing in on my internal experience, the more I understood others. I certainly would needed the help to use personality, but I realized the depth of people beyond just personality through learning the depth of my own experience. And that was not just personality, like I said, what people value, and lastly, what the quality of their mind states are, those 10 mind qualities. When you intersect all those three things, that's a more fuller picture of the human being that you're dealing with, and as far as a predictability index of what you can expect from that person. Does that make
sense? Thank you very much. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I mean, there's different ways of approaching it. I agree.
It's kind of shortcutting the whole system with the, you know, those sites, you know, they actually end up working pretty well, I hear, because they kind of blend the kind of, you know, the old school approach with a lot of newer, let's understand each other first a little bit more. And so, I think there's benefits on both sides of it. And communication is the key, really, in any sort of relationship.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your call.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Mike.
Appreciate the show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So,
look at that.
Yeah.
California. Very nice to get a call from out there.
Okay, let's take this this person to comment on compassion. I find that I often show compassion when I witness the stress of others.
I just said that.
As an example, I have a friend that is currently struggling as a single mother who wants to be perfect at everything. When I leave her, when I hear her speak of her struggles or witness her frustrations that she cannot be perfect, I instinctively have compassion towards her. As I think about this, I had an interesting reflection that it feels easier for me to show compassion towards my friend when I see her frustrations with not being perfect than it is for me to show compassion towards myself for the same reasons. This is an area of my life that I am working on. Boy, what an honest statement.
I know. It's key, you know, it's key that this person can see how they're acting towards somebody else and themselves. So that's a real progression right there.
Definitely, self-awareness is there.
That's key.
Look, we've got about 60 seconds left to wrap this up.
Oh, my gosh, no way.
To wrap up this barn burner, is that what you call it?
The barn burner show. Equanimity.
Barn burner.
Barn burner.
Yeah. I like it. That's been a good one. So
but I think if anybody has really any questions or want any comments, they can certainly
write us in hello@admirablefriends.org. Any questions like our caller had regarding relationships, we'll be happy to take a crack at it through the mind qualities. But I like how we worked our way from the mind quality, the deepest sense, all the way up to personality today. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And this is the end of the 10 idea mind qualities, so we start all over.
Yeah, so join us next week for sure, because we start with determination, which is the first.
The overriding
mind quality. Okay, until next week, folks.
Thanks for putting up with this subject tonight, everybody. We appreciate you staying with us.
Thanks for the admirable friendship. I appreciate it.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.